quite a task.
Thank you for the feedback. It was taped the week before.
Oh, yeah?
I drove home, you know, I was like, oh, God, you know, I hope I didn't embarrass myself too much. And
where did you have to go? Was it down in West?
Syracuse.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. The whole thing was there. All the other guests were from Albany. So for me, it's kind of local, actually. But
yeah, that was really neat. And look, another good reminder of why Cornell is so cool. It was like, hey, look, our people are here.
Yeah, Cornell has influence, right?
And I liked when they started to push back more about the variety of things. Like, you really stuck with, like, the point of electrify the stuff.
Yeah. I was glad that the guy sitting next to me agreed. He's the former Joe Martin. I'd never met him before, actually. He's the former TEC commissioner. Mm-hmm. And back when he was TEC commissioner, I was one of the people who hammered him regularly by letter and in the press for not doing more of fracking. Because that was before he decided, right? And he was
like, yeah.
So we never met, but he knew exactly who I was, you know.
Right.
So I wasn't sure how he was going to react to me. We get along fine.
Yeah. And I would say you outpaced the other guy. Like, if it was the halves of the table, you were the heavy bringer.
Well, you're biased by your viewpoint, but, you know. The one guy representing the business bureau, what are you going to do? I thought you did a good job of representing the business bureau.
You didn't.
The politician, I thought, was kind of an idiot.
Well, yeah, that's... you definitely get that vibe. Like, hey, I don't know.
Yeah, I was waiting for him to say clean coal. I was like, come on, dude.
How are you
today? But I thought
actually,
it was
the wife of the guy who represents the
territory
for Cornell.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, she works in communications.
You know.
I didn't realize. He told me that before we started. Another reason I better be careful what I say.
I think you did very well, and I was pleasantly surprised. That I was like, hey,
how you doing? I passed. At what point did you pass? I think it was when I was 21. And it's been all hell since
then. You peaked at 21?
I peaked at 21.
21?
It's 21. It
holy shit. 21. What year was that?
That was 1970. And I was 21, and
you and I are the same age.
And I was applying for a CO because it was my last year. And as it turned out, gears rolled, I waited it out, and then July, still 21, made me a CO, and I started working at the hospital.
How are you?
So, but that was it. That was the peak. You know, it could have been more disastrous.
I relied on the lottery. Ended up with a high number, 327. Well, but I grew up in a small town in New Hampshire. You know, that where they made the cutoff depended on how patriotic the local people, the local board were. They drafted right up to 299.
It's
running
late.
That was
all
I was
thinking. What
about
is it?
I was going to ask you.
You're just like, it's running late.
Okay, but it's coming.
Yeah.
It's coming. Okay.
I was done.
Why would you give it a coffee? That is a good question.
The coffee's sitting over in the corner. But it fell down, and I don't think anyone would put it back up. Really? Is this something we can take care of?
It's not doing the battery today, but
so there's the hook. It looks like.
Used to be in the corner.
It's a little shiny.
Yeah. Does it like get worse than
that? No.
So the next thing.
Am I peeking in?
You're I just take.
Eyes are not.
Yep.
They're improving.
Okay.
Line up the other end.
Clock is there, batteries are dead.
Needs two double A's.
So
you can hang it up, but it would be distracted.
So,
unless you went and changed it every 5 minutes.
Not right.
It's not clock. The stop clock is right twice a day.
You got some double A's.
I didn't think to bring some.
You carry double A's with you all the time?
Unfortunately not. They're my computer bag, but not my regular bag. Charlie, how are you today?
Hello, Matthew.
Joel, good to see you again.
I see you all the time.
Oh, I hope that's a good thing.
It is a good thing.
How are you?
I'm pretty well. That's cold. Good. Happy to be indoors.
It is chilly, but unfortunately, it is that time of year.
Actually abnormally cold for this time of year.
Ah, there we are. Thank you.
Did you really? Around my office yesterday?
Yeah.
How many do you need?
300. Hello, good.
Hello.
Hi. Help me pronounce your name, Tyrannealu? Just T.
Yeah.
Hi, T. I'm Joel. Mm-hmm. Nice to
good
see you.
Tea
makes a very
thank
easy
you so
one.
Much. You're welcome. And the pros really does not want to do that. Yeah. He would be happy to the faculty staff would let the UA put
hello, how are you, Dale?
I'm good. How are you? Oh, I see.
You'll be okay.
I am alive and relatively well. How are you?
That's good. I was sick over the weekend, but I'm feeling better now.
Pam?
Everyone's been sick, unfortunately.
I have not been sick, so stay away from it.
Oh, okay.
Stay healthy.
But I'm not
super
that keeps me going around, unfortunately.
I'm not super worried.
For a second, I thought maybe I passed my name and forgot what my name was.
Your name is like
so.
At
home. Oh, that'd be great.
Yeah.
Really?
I'm the so freshman coach.
Can you get reimbursed for
that?
Oh, I'm here. Yeah. All right.
Is there a difference? All right.
But do you need something from them?
Is there a difference?
Yes.
Hey, good sir.
Or it's the same organization. Okay. I know Reed, she is in motherboard with me now, so I'll probably be reaching out to you.
What does Mortarboard do? Other than the meeting? Serious question.
Last lecture. And then a couple philanthropy events. Right now we have a philanthropy event called Pay It Forward. You donate money to the homeless community of Ithaca if you would like to donate. The homeless community of Ithaca to help provide warmth during this cold time.
Or do I send money to?
What?
Who do I send money to?
Winnie.
Winnie.
No, Winnie-3.
She's your year.
No, she is the class above mine.
My year?
Mm-hmm. She was former president of APO.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
No, this is better. You have to keep your place.
How does your work be good?
Oh, well.
You'll appreciate this. I attended the Dean's meeting, which Dean Penyal there hosted. And I met this my first time in Hughes Hall. It's really lovely.
It was just
oh, that works too. I was going to go right there.
It was really. I'm
not. It was being difficult.
You're making the beer.
We were not invited.
Terrible.
I'm going to align it.
No,
I think interviewed
is
over the time.
It's no. Do you wear?
Thank God. So no Mary yet.
Not Brian. We're gonna go in a moment.
Okay.
Our food is a little bit late, so we'll have some time
to
do that. But
I'm happy to be indoors. Cold.
Yeah.
Sure. This weather should be.
This is like a couldn't even like a surprise thing, right?
Thing.
That,
like,
it's
so
to
me.
As
far
as the,
I mean,
oh,
no, right.
We do.
To get to
the Richard, yeah, we do. Someone stepped out, we have one. Very warm.
That's what's
no, there's a problem.
People keep things.
Mary, it's good to see you.
Like a soul change.
How are you?
Yeah,
I don't
know.
Maybe it's not.
I know it. Fantastic.
Oh, yeah?
Drop this way.
Yes.
Oh,
yeah,
there's
a oh, look at that.
It's good right there.
Okay.
It's not working.
But Dale has to come back up.
Yeah.
I guess what?
I can go out the front.
I wish the essay met in this room sometimes.
Is it big enough?
Yeah, it is. That's what it's
not.
Sure. Apparently there's something.
That was the power network?
No, I just wanted to plug in my laptop.
Yeah, I don't get, are we still? Yeah, but it's not accessible.
Okay, oh, good luck in the exam.
That's true.
This building?
It has like the elevator and like the back, you have to go through like.
And we're well.
Yeah.
You can go through the lift from the loading.
I live in the room.
Yeah, you have to go through the back, through the loading dock.
Which isn't really very accessible, if you think about it.
So Dale, you're gonna keep my dime?
You must be on the.
You never know when that dime might come in handy.
Are we all set to run? Fantastic. Start moving to the end.
Thank you, I'm ready. Remember, you guys are ready.
Fantastic. So that was a quorum, so we'll get going. Good afternoon, everyone. The time is 4:31. We have a quorum present, so I'm calling this meeting of the University Assembly to order. We are very happy to be joined by Joel Molina, John Celestino, and Mary Opperman, who will be presenting today. We also have Marion Clarksburg coming later to talk about Middle State's accreditation. Going through our agenda briefly at the beginning, are there any late additions for our agenda this afternoon? Hearing none, we'll move on. Looking next to the approval of the minutes from our February 19th, 2019 minute meeting. Are there any comments or questions on those? I know those are sent out relatively late, so if there's no dissent, we will table or probably postpone those until our next meeting, so those have, everyone has a chance to look them over. Is there any dissent to postpone those for until our next meeting? Hearing none, the minutes from February 19th will be postponed. That takes us into our presentation by Mary Opperman and Joel Molina about Cornell values. Please join me in welcoming them to the assembly.
What are you doing here?
We can, yes, actually.
Sure.
So thank you all very much. We have a very tiny, very short presentation about core values. I'm looking around and some of you have now, is this five?
This was my fifth one. I'm overrepresented in this value statement, so.
So if I change anything, call me out on it. So just as a quick reminder for those of you who were here, you may remember that that President Pollack had a task force on the climate after some incidents two falls ago. And the so the Presidential Task Force on the Campus Climate and the Provost's Committee on Faculty Diversity both came out with a recommendation that the university develop and then use a set of core values. So what I'm doing here today, what I've done with the other assemblies, and a number of sort of groups around campus, is I'm here to seek your feedback as we create the core values. So and just as a quick reminder, most of you have seen or experienced core values before, but it's a good opportunity to kind of stand back and say, what are core values? So they are something that endures, they're consistent, and they're not really about business practices, but they're about what we believe. They underlie how we work together, how we make decisions together, the strategies that we use to fulfill our mission, and how we go about our work. They govern our personal relationships with one another, and they guide, as I said, our strategies and business practices. They clarify who we are and what we stand for, and they underpin the whole organization. What they're not are operating practices or business strategies themselves, cultural norms or competencies, and they're not just for individuals. They're meant to frame how we treat one another interpersonally. So I thought I'd just show you a couple of core value statements just to get kind of the hang of what these are. So what they tend to be are either words or short phrases that advance the belief systems of the organization. So these are the University of Hi.
Am I coming in here? Am I setting up out here?
For food?
Yes.
Come on in, don't you think?
And everyone's happy to see the person with food. Oh, it's Moe's. So the true story, I've never seen a Moe's before, and we were in another state, and we walked in, and they say, when you walk in,
welcome to Moe's.
I thought they said, sorry, we're closed. So I walked out. I just didn't hear.
I hope the Daily Sun is here and that they report on that wonderful story. That's great, Mary.
So the University of Texas at Austin has the following six core values: learning, discovery, freedom, leadership, individual response, opportunity, and responsibility. And you'll see the short phrases that they developed underneath each. This is Harvard's four short phrases: respect for the rights, differences, and dignity of others, honesty and integrity in all dealings, conscientious pursuit of excellence in one's work, and accountability for actions and conduct in the workplace. I'm going to stop before I go to the last one and say one of the important opportunities with core values and why they tend to be developed this way with sort of lots of conversations and drafts is that it's hard to argue with core values. Usually we can all see them and say those are really good core values. So the opportunity organization is to create core values that are really about that organization as opposed to sort of could be for anybody. And so with that, it's a corporate one, but I wanted to show Southwest Airlines. And how many of you have flown on Southwest? You knew I was going to ask that question.
Yes.
So if you've ever flown on Southwest, you look at their core values. You can decide for yourself, but I'll just tell you mine. You can see in their business decisions how they use their core values. So they have a warrior spirit, striving to be the best, a servant's heart, treating others with respect, fun-loving attitude, if you've ever been sung on an air on a Southwest flight, work safely, wow our customers, and keep your costs low. So those are, thank you. That is the Southwest value system. It has endured, they've tinkered with it, but it has endured for a long time. So what are we doing now? So we are having these discussions with all of the assemblies and a number of other committees. I've driven a number of these. I will tell you the president has had a number, and I get emails from her with the notes she's taken. So we've been collecting the notes from the discussions with the assemblies and other staff, faculty, and student groups. From these, we are going to create a draft. What we plan to do with the draft is we will post the draft on the website for public comment, and we'll give it a comment period. We'd like to get that draft up if possible in like end of March or so, and so people can have a decent amount of time to give their feedback. We'll also hold a couple of open listening sessions because not everybody expresses themselves best on, you know, online. And this will give people who want to express more than they can type an opportunity to do that. So we'll have a couple of those. And the goal, which is what the president promised, is after that we'll refine the draft and finalize it by the end of the semester, which is consistent with what she agreed to with both the task force and the committee. So that's the process. And now what I would ask is Joel's going to kind of curate this conversation. So what I'd ask you to start thinking about are words or phrases at the core value level, so words or phrases that you feel, maybe you can actually go back to, that not only do you feel embody what we believe, but also embody what we particularly believe about Cornell. And Joel will keep the conversation going, and I'll just be typing what you say. So that's why I'm over here not saying anything and pounding. So with
thank
that,
you, Mary.
We're going to just sort of open it up.
Yeah, all I would say is this is a blank canvas. You all have a good feel for Cornell. Some of you have been here for a
a long time, some a very brief time, but no matter what, you have a sense of what Cornell should represent among its community members. So who would like to start, whether words or phrases? What do you think should be included in this core values statement?
I can go first.
Yes, please.
I think sustainability is, our county is number one in the whole state, and we're a big member of the county. Our campus planning committee is, the building and the master plans are all about how are we going to get to carbon neutral 2030. And I think that it will be a missed opportunity if we don't have something in that area, because it is something that is very important. We're a land grant school.
Sure.
That to me is something that we should try to go for.
Thank you. Yes, T.
I would say inclusivity. I know what drew me to Cornell when I was coming in undecided as a freshman from Nigeria was the fact that it's not any person, any study. And so just the idea of having everything as welcome on Cornell, as long as it is, good and not harmful to the other.
Thank you. Jeremy, you look like you're going to say something, but maybe
not quite
yet.
We could jump in, but I would offer community leadership. Cornell's one of the few institutions where I've seen a real opportunity for all members of our community to be active at all levels of leadership throughout the university. I think that's unique to us.
Right, thanks. Yes.
Jumping off of that, I think that research is also very important to the Cornell community. There's a lot of opportunity for undergraduates, graduate students to work with acclaimed researchers.
If we were to turn that, research as a value, maybe discovery,
I would put it with greater community or, individuality. Even,
very good.
Just
okay.
Opportunities.
Thank you. Richard.
So I think an overarching statement that says the core values apply to everyone, the staff, faculty, administration, students. And within that, a very strong statement regarding freedom of expression and speech.
Absolutely.
Should be in this as well.
Thank you. Yes, Lori.
Linda.
I'll call you Lori. Linda.
Truth.
I got the L.
Truth for truth's sake. I really like that in the current climate. About something about truth for no matter what. And also the public purpose seems really distinctive. Like when you read Harvard's, there's nothing about outward looking. About a public purpose, that seems huge.
Thank you, Linda. Yes, Marty.
I think interdisciplinarity, in some ways, things the various points that have been made so far have that interdisciplinary dimension, but it's talking across. So research, which talks across fields, knits together people who are working in diverse areas as opposed to polarizing or siloizing their work. Because any person, any study, says everybody is worthy of an education. And I would say that education is inclusive in the sense that it thinks about intersections between different fields, different desires, different aspects of human and natural conditions.
Great, thank you. Other thoughts, things that either have not yet been said or your take on something that has been said, Jeff?
I think what Marty said really is a good point too, because that any study is what leads to that need and that natural progression towards a collaborative interaction between different groups.
I would say something around global responsibility, just because Cornell is a continuously globalizing university. And understanding that
human rights across the globe are something that we should have at the basis of our global actions. You know, not partnering with universities that suppress the freedom of speech, not partnering with areas that use slave labor. So really understanding that our economic impact is not only in the United States, but also outside of the United States, and we can use that across the globe. Right.
Are we raising placards?
No. That'll work.
Yeah. I also just a thought on the commitment that Cornell will always be groundbreaking and innovative, that we'll never start saying no to doing things at a certain point in time, that we'll always be open to bringing new groups of students to this campus, the any person thing, that we'll do it before any other school thinks that bringing certain students here is a good idea. We'll be open to that. We'll add new studies to our curriculum before anyone else will, because we're always open to researching new things regardless of what the rest of the world is doing. So a commitment, not just to any person, any study, and any ideas, but just also a commitment to being okay being the first people to do those anythings.
It's kind of a risk taking.
Yeah, risk taking, groundbreaking.
I would also say tolerance, because it's important to have, and I guess this goes hand in hand with diversity, which is, it's important to have different perspectives from different like cultures and different parts of the world represented on campus. And it's also important to have a community which makes those individuals feel safe and, you know, welcome. So it's important to have tolerance as, you know, one of our values.
Another word I might throw in is collegiality, which goes with tolerance and interdisciplinariness. This university is much more collegial than many other places I've observed. It's part of the reason we can be interdisciplinary and tolerant.
Yes, Lena.
So, you know, I'm working in alumni affairs now, and I'm really getting a sense of the lifelong learning aspect of this. That's something that you don't think about, you know, until you're actually engaging with this huge community of alumni. So I think that should be in there.
Any final thoughts?
I think perhaps I'll,
Matthew.
Ashwin, go ahead.
I like Linda's earlier point about public purpose and how we could like act on certain things. I think where Harvard's core values and Texas fell short was they didn't have ways, and they didn't like have ways where those core values could be like implemented, whereas Southwest had a bunch of things where their values are shining through in the way in which they do them, which is listed on the core values. So if we were able to implement a lot of these ideas with also having ways in which we've already and plan to in the future implement them, that could be more powerful.
Marty.
Just want to put a historical spin on this in the sense that, and a locale spin, that is, people talk about Ithaca being centrally isolated, Tompkins County. I think, in fact, Cornell, in its circumstances here, the center of the state and so forth, but also in a, not a metropolitan area, to say the least, it set an atmosphere which inspires and in that sense requires that collegiality, that intersection of disciplines. And it's a theme that runs through Cornell from as early as I was here, been near 50 years. It was way before that as well, because collaboration across colleges, across disciplines within a college, and now across schools. You know, or dead dimensions of the schools, whether in New York or so forth. And it's not something to think of as you know, we got to get on a bus and go somewhere. Actually, we're going out into our community, I guess you could say, to practice things we're doing.
Matthew.
Yes, actually, and perhaps to close, I just wanted to, Jeremy touched on it earlier, but the idea of community governance, and obviously that takes many forms. We have a very long and proud history of community elected trustees, alumni elected trustees. We have shared governance, but even outside of that, I have colleagues and friends who have never formally engaged in the shared governance process, but frequently will talk to deans, administrators, or other people with positions of power of the university bring forward suggestions or talk about ideas. And I think that's something that is incredibly unique to Cornell, and our long history of it is definitely a core value. And I think being that we're in the university assembly is important to at the very least make sure that that's noted.
Thank you. And thank you for this opportunity. Mary, any closing words?
So thank you very much. There's some themes that are showing up more often than others. And so just as a reminder, all of these are great ideas, but eventually we'll have to probably get them down to between 5 and 7 key themes. So there are definitely some things we are hearing over and over again. So excellence, the sustainability, diversity and inclusion. There are others that are here, but it'll be, I would be really interested when the draft goes out, if you could, if you're comfortable right on the site, go ahead and post right on the site. But if you really feel like, you know, these should be connected in a different way, you can just write them to me directly, because like I said, I've been listening to all these conversations and not sure that it will be possible to tie them all together, but if we've tied them in the wrong way, we really need to know. So thank you very
much.
Thank you. Please join me in thanking Mary and Joel. And the next item on our agenda, actually Mary is also for that, to see Mary and John talking about Cornell University Policy 6.4. So the floor is yours again.
So thank you. So this is actually, the policy is not being changed. This is the procedures under the policy. So what I wanted to do is just go over with you some of the elements of the new procedures, and I need to back up to go forward. So a group of us had put together a set of proposed procedures and sent them out to the assemblies for consideration. The faculty senate looked at the proposed procedures, and they were not comfortable with them. So the dean of faculty helped us put together a small working group. Professor Cynthia Bowman from the law school chaired that group, and we spent considerable time over the last couple of months. Right, Rena was there. We were advising these graduate students there, a staff member there, the faculty were there, and those of us who are and the bureaucrats were there. And so we have now revised these policies again from the ones that we, so I'm sorry, but I need to come back. We are coming back around for the proposed changes, which are, which the faculty are supportive of. So let me just go over what some of the key changes to the procedures will be. First of all, we had had multiple procedures. So just as a reminder, the procedures that guide the Title IX area are decided by the respondent. So a complaining party complains against a person. So these are person-to-person cases. Complains against a person, and that person is either a student, a staff member, a faculty member. In some cases, they are not related to the university, and those actually are handled differently. It is the status of the responding party that guides which of these procedures are drive the procedure forward. So the vast majority of cases we receive are issues between two students. That's true for every higher ed institution, it's true here. So a number of years ago, under the leadership of John Silicano, we radically revised the procedures for student complaints. And we left alone the procedures for staff and complaints against staff and faculty. And so the major difference between the two was that the student procedures culminate in an investigator investigates the facts of the case and then sends those facts to a hearing board, and the hearing board decides the matter. But we had left alone the investigator model for staff and faculty. So an investigator, in the case of a faculty member with a co-investigator, would investigate the case and also make a recommendation for decision that went to the cognizant senior officer. the faculty members that met with us felt very strongly that the student process was a better process, that having the case move, still have an investigator find the facts, but then move the facts to a hearing board for the hearing board to decide the matter. And in the case of staff and faculty, recommend the sanction. The sanction is recommended to the corresponding dean or vice president. Because, and the reason for that, which is that does differ because the these are employees. And so the action normally recommended will be a matter that that impacts employment. So with that as a backdrop, let me go over the changes to the procedures. So one thing that we did is we combined the staff and faculty procedures. So there's no longer one for faculty and one for staff. The complaining party is a staff or faculty member, it's the same procedure. We adopted the definitions of sexual and related misconduct from the student procedures. And the reason we did that is the ones that were in the staff and faculty were actually outdated and not consistent with Title IX, or importantly for us, New York state law. Some of you have heard about enough is enough. So that has definitions in it. So now the procedures have the appropriate definitions in them. In the area of academic freedom and freedom of speech, in the old procedures, if the party was complaining about something that the faculty, this is mostly faculty, faculty member felt was actually a matter of freedom of speech, academic freedom, the way the old procedures worked, you went through the whole investigation with the and the recommended findings, and then that matter was reviewed by the faculty.
Academic freedom and professional status.
That committee. What we've done is we've flipped that. If the responding party believes that the matter that they are being they're being complaints against about is a matter protected by academic freedom, that matter will be looked at first. So it's sort of a first cut on the matter, and if it is in fact covered by academic freedom, it's done. So that move to move it up forward in the beginning of the procedure. The statute of limitations on complaints. We had a very narrow statute of limitations. You could file a complaint for 6 months after the final incident. We have expanded that statute to 3 years. Recognizing, and this is recognized in the language, that the longer you go from the time of the incidents, the harder these actually become to investigate. People leave, memories fade, materials go away, but we have expanded the statute of limitations. The investigation itself, as I said, we had investigators before. We have adopted the student procedures here, which is important. There is now complete transparency in the collection and sharing of information. We've done the same thing with these procedures that we did with the student procedures. The hearing panel. This, we did not have a hearing panel before, and now we do. So the final investigative report and all of the evidence provided will be provided to the hearing panels. The hearing panels are three people. They are always trained. They're trained every year. So they are a mix of faculty and staff who actually volunteer for this. And then they are trained. If the matter is directed at a faculty member, the majority of people on the panel will be faculty. If it is directed at staff, the majority will be staff. The hearing board, and there's also, by the way, including the three, there is also a non-voting chair. This is the same person all the time. So Joel Atlas and is Carol still doing it? And Carol Grumbach are our hearing, non-voting hearing chairs. This is an incredibly important element in this, because they provide a lot of the procedural direction and they sort of scaffold the process for the hearing board, many of whom are not lawyers, or even if they are lawyers, they're not lawyers specializing in this area of the law. So they then they take in the case. They have the right to ask for investigate, to ask questions, to interview, and then they make a decision, both on the case itself, and also on recommended sanctions. That finding on culpability, as well as the recommended sanctions, then go to the cognizant officer. So if it's in a college, it would go to a dean. If it's in an administrative unit, it would go to the vice president. And the dean then has the ability to accept the findings and recommended sanctions. If they want to vary from the recommended sanctions, we are requiring that they say why. Just so that there's a clear record if we vary from the recommendations of the hearing board. There's an appeal to a hearing panel as a final step. And the hearing panel will be the provost, the vice president for human resources, the vice president for student and campus life, or designees. And that's the final step in the process.
Fantastic. So, thank you. If anyone has a question or comment, please raise your hand or placard and I'll put you on the speakers list. I just first want to start by thanking you for coming. John will remember, John Alan Mittman and Carol Grumbach actually came here, came to the assembly in 2015-16 when the student provisions were being, procedures were being redone. We had an excellent discussion then. We're very glad to host you again. I have Bob is the first person on the speakers list. Anyone else, please raise your hand to placard.
And a little bit to Mary first.
Of course.
So we did this extensive revision of the student procedures, as Mary said. I was involved in that, and then I've been involved since in the appeals process, watching the cases come up. I'm one of the final deciders for student-to-student cases. I saw the cases that came up under the old system that were still in the pipeline, and then the new ones. This system, and we've largely modeled the current system on that, works so much better, both in terms of the perceived fairness of it and the degree of complaints that were going to outside agencies, you know, that Cornell is handling these cases unfairly. So it's just been, we've tinkered at the margin to sort of fine tune it over time, but it is, you know, fortunately, all of that effort, which is done by many people, has really paid off in a system that is more reliable, better process, more transparent, more process like the hearings than the one we had before. So that's the experience on the student side. The experience on the faculty and staff side, far, far fewer cases, but triangulating from what's happened on the student side, we have a lot of confidence.
Thank you, John. I appreciate that. As also just for the members of the assembly, as I said, we worked very closely with them last time because the UA is formally a stakeholder in policy 6.4. Going back to the days when 6.4 was pulled out of the code due to a myriad of legal issues, and we're always happy to work with you on this. First of all, I have Bob, then Richard.
Yes, thank you for coming. I'm wondering if you've thought about or envisioned any sort of role for the departmental faculty to have an engagement when there's an accusation against a faculty member. And the reason I raise that is that in my department, none under 6.4 because of statute of limitations issues, but we had a unpleasant circumstance, which was investigated, was eventually settled, and the departmental faculty were not engaged in any way, which many of us, well, let's say more than that, our department faculty voted unanimously to say that was problematic. It caused us other problems. And I understand the delicacy of confidentiality versus engagement, but I'm wondering if you've thought at all about how to think about that balance.
Well, I do know the matter that you're talking about, and I would say that if we had had different procedures, these procedures, and a different statute of limitations, I'm not sure that what ended up having to happen at that department would have had to happen at that department. Mm-hmm. That said, the investigation, I know you understand this because you just talked about confidentiality, but the investigation has to go as far as it needs to collect relevant information and no farther. So in a case that's involving faculty members' conduct, it actually is likely that the investigators would need to have conversations with people who have had a reason to be engaged in that department and know. It isn't the case that it would every faculty member would know about every matter, and none of you would want that. But I think if I was to say one case that made clear we needed to change these procedures, it was probably that one. And that statute of limitations really was a driving problem there. Had it gone into an investigative mode, and that this time frame would have allowed that last case, that last matter, to go into an investigative mode, we just wouldn't have ended up with the department having as having to do as much as it had to do.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Richard.
So in your description, it sounded like whatever decision or recommendation the hearing board made would go to the vice president
or dean
or dean. When that happened, what is the latitude for the dean or vice president to act? Can they increase sanctions, reduce sanctions, find guilt where there was innocence where there was guilt? What is
the... Right. So not on the findings themselves. So the hearing, because they did not participate in the hearing board, so they can't say, you said this person was culpable, we say they are not, because they didn't participate in the investigation. Where they have potential latitude is in the application of sanctions. And the reason for that is that they may know things that the hearing board did not know. And I'll give you a great example. So if this is an individual that has had other problems, not matters directly related to this case, not even matters maybe directly related to Title IX, but matters that the dean, and with consultation to the chair, and cases where we have a chair, feel would up that sanction. So they have the right to up the sanction. They also have the right to recommend a low sanction. However, and this was a conversation, we spent a lot of time on this in the small group. We felt that it was very important that they have to then go back to the hearing board and explain why. So that if they know things that the hearing board did not know, then they should explain that. If they feel that the sanction is too harsh, they need to explain why. Because the hearing panel was really the ones that looked into all of this. And so that's the way that we kind of contoured that.
The other thing I would add to it is the dean or vice president can't find differently. And this is true of all sort of hierarchical systems of adjudication, as they didn't see the witnesses, they can't assess credibility. So basic findings of fact are at the level where all the data is coming in. On the appeal level, one thing that they can look at is sanctions. Another thing that that person can look at is whether there were flaws in the investigation or process flaws in the hearing. So they can look at how things were investigated or how they were decided. What they can't touch is if it was properly investigated and properly processed at the hearing, then the finding that somebody has done something is properly left there, and then they're left with the sanction.
Could I briefly follow up? So the dean or vice president goes back to the hearing board and has a different opinion in the hearing and explains it to the hearing board. Can the hearing board then reiterate their initial decision? Can they comment on it?
Right, so remember, this is only on the level of sanction that the dean has mm-hmm. movement.
I might say, I think that's important. It's just like a jury that be able to comment.
To pull the we talked a lot about this, and I just don't want to say the wrong thing. So let me just pull the language up, really, the draft language up really quick to make sure I'm not saying the wrong thing.
Point of information.
Yes. Yeah.
Has the assembly been shared any forms of the draft language at this time?
I've not received any. We can certainly ask for it. So would it be possible to circulate the draft language?
Yes. We have one more step to go with I don't want to do that till the faculty committee that's been working on it just has a chance to sign up on all the language. So, and we're just not quite there yet, but yes, we will.
I'll follow up to make sure we get that sent out, Dale. Thank you.
May I interject a follow-up question while you're looking that up related to Richards is when the dean or vice president goes back to the hearing board, does the person who's been accused have any ability to comment on that?
Yes, they do. Once the recommendations of the hearing board come out, both parties have an opportunity to make comments, and those would be shared.
And that would, if there's a final appeal to the committee with the provost and all, that would be part of the proceedings.
Yes, exactly. Yep.
So at the decision at the dean or vice president level, whoever's the head of the unit, it goes in both directions. Obviously, if it simply affirms that, then the party has an appeal. If they modify the sanction, then the purpose of going back to the hearing panel is to, in essence, it's a little bit more than courtesy, but there's a courtesy element of it. We're trying to create a conversation between the hearing group and the dean, where the dean says, I know you did this, but looking at it a little differently, I am going to do this or that to modify it. So that's, you know, in some sense, courtesy, but it's also a feedback loop so that the parties understand the thinking. But at that point, there's also the main action in terms of, you know, legal-wise, is that it goes, appeal is going up to the final panel of the provost vice presidents.
Well, Mary's looking at a question on that. John, you had mentioned that, in essence, that the appeal level of dean is not really questions of guilt or innocence in this case. It's more us. It's looking at procedural issues as well as that. I'm curious, how would that process work if exculpatory or inculpatory evidence were to come forward later? In essence, we have new reason to believe Professor Smith did something or Professor Smith did not something that is significant. If they're not looking at fact, where would that go?
So the appeals provisions in both here and the students have a provision for new evidence. And it's a standard provision. It's evidence that wasn't available at the time of the original adjudication. Because what you don't want is a party sort of holding their evidence and then saying, hey, guess what? So it's new evidence that wasn't knowable. That can result in essentially a remand for rethinking. So if a new witness comes forward that is credible and is important, then you're able to review it. We don't want this to be sort of a sudden death procedure that you didn't show up to then.
Thank you.
Can I also just say, I'm sorry, I'm not great at this whole multitasking thing, but while I'm still looking, that if another possible thing that can happen in the case you just talked about is that a whole new set of information comes in. And then in those cases, the university can choose to advance a complaint. So we don't necessarily have to wait for another complaining party. If we've had something and then a whole bunch of new stuff comes in, we can generate the review again if we feel we need to. And this is not as much an issue on a student-to-student circumstance because they're here for a contained period of time. But if that were to occur, that we do always have that option. I think, you know, rather than the parties withholding information, actually brand new information comes up.
Thank you. So I have T, Joe, and Bob in the speakers list. I know Mary is looking up the specific language around the draft. Is there anyone else who'd like to spend the speakers list while we wait a second for Mary to pull that up? Seeing none, T, you're up next once we are able to pull that draft language.
Yeah.
T yields. Actually, that would make Joe next once we are all set to go. And I should also say the food has arrived, so please feel free to help yourself.
That's a good idea. Let's start. Set the chairs.
I'll follow you. Excuse me, I'm burning
some time.
It's what happens if they send it to the dean. The dean says we think we don't. May consult with the dean.
Okay, to the new.
Notice, but
rejects to that size.
Is it supposed to do that one?
How are you?
Okay.
Are you not at the library?
No. Oh.
I don't want to say no.
You have enough time.
Well, I finished it.
Oh.
It's only 2 months.
So, if
that must have been really interesting.
Didn't have the issue with the hosting, we would have been fine.
No. The big takeaway is, you know, every case agent is an arresting officer. There's someone from either the state or the
okay. But you don't need the website for what time.
Yeah, sure.
There hasn't ever really been something.
So the form's not actually hosted on the website. There's another link that I can give you.
You can see how stuff happens.
It's leandavid.typeform.com.
Yeah.
Busy.
That would be
great.
This case. You hear like two minutes.
Absolutely.
One was the kind of something very, very,
very,
very,
very,
very,
very, very, very, very,
very, very, very, very,
very, very, very, very, very, very, very, very, very, very, very, very, very, very, very, very, very, very, very, very, very, very, very,
very, very, very,
very, very, very, very, very,
very, very, very,
very, very,
very, very, very, very, very,
very, very,
very, very, very, very, very,
very, very, very, very, very,
there were some concerns about.
Yeah.
Yes. And I don't
so you have one eye on the horizon.
I can't figure out how to.
Or both eyes.
So I went to a green thing. Hanging around with some strange people. It's called challenge.
Yeah.
It was one of the last
I did feel like a question was to ask.
Yeah.
So the reason that there's a statues of limitations in the field is just a concept of evidence.
So are you on the money? What
you mean, why does the law exist?
No, why is
the
statue? He was 3 years and then after.
That's actually really a question. That would probably have a good answer to.
Writing.
I feel like it's probably the fact that like it tends to be that like situations that would come up for value have passed the 3 year mark probably sure.
Yeah, I mean that's a question about statutes of limitations.
But they're
yeah.
What's the philosophical reason behind having statutes of limitation?
I don't know.
Snack,
okay.
Or more specifically, for sexual.
No, I think
we can do
channel.
Yeah.
Or
it's
also be at the website.
However long it is.
John Reena and I are like looking at this thing. We did an amazing in a very short period of time. So the way that we ended up writing this is that
one of them
sanctions will be recommended pretty specifically from the hearing panel sent to what we're calling the reviewer, meaning the dean or vice president, who then will talk to the hearing board, talk to others, and they will then, there is not the loop back to the hearing. And I remember talking about this and deciding together that the hearing board panel needed to be done. That would be, it would be on record what the hearing board recommended, but the hearing board would be finished. So it would seem that if there is a sanction other than the sanction recommended, which they will know, right, both parties will know, then they can appeal to the appeal board on the sanction itself.
Yeah. The hearing board can appeal.
No, the hearing board will be informed if the sanction is changed, but either party can appeal.
It seemed to me that there would be circumstances under which the hearing board would really like to be heard.
Well, that would occur at the appeal. So the hearing, if the issue is being dealt with at the hearing panel or the appeal panel, then the hearing board through the chair would explain why they came up with the sanction that they
So there would be a written record?
Yes, it's all written down.
So there'd be a written record of the hearing board's response to the change in sanctions?
Yes.
Okay, that's what it is.
And we went back and forth on this very issue to try to find the right roles for the parties and not end up at the end of this very sort of involved process, just having that kind of skid away. So we had a bunch of different ideas, and that's how we ended up. That's what we ended up agreeing to.
Thank you. Next on the speaker list is Joe.
So my question kind of goes to you with these changes. What does it now look like for a student who is a complainant, a faculty member or a staff member being respondent? And does that change the hearing view composition in which the so like if it's a faculty member that's a respondent, still a faculty majority, but are there now staff members who are in student campus life to give, like, how is that kind of decided with those staff members and how are students kind of seen in that when it's in combining? Because I recognize that there's a converging of process now, it's very similar, but there still remains fundamental differences of like how students feel like they're getting a fair shake on these hearing review boards.
Yep, so we actually talked about the, how do you get a student voice on the hearing panels? And honestly, you don't. The panels are convened based on the ongoing trained hearing panels themselves of faculty and staff. So what we discuss and what Title IX is doing is involving students in the development of the training, both the training so they know what we're training the panels on, but also the campus-wide training, is ultimately, I have to be honest with you, very few cases come through these procedures. And this isn't to offend, I'm part of the community, so I'm not offending myself either. It's unlikely that so few matters are actually out there. So what we really need to do is focus on the training element of this to get people to bring the issues forward. And that's, so we agreed that that's where we needed student input. So we're creating a student, an advisory council that would have undergrads and grad students on it. If you haven't, you'll be hearing from Sean Paul.
And then can I just like, so is there, would an option be in those cases, since they're so rare, having the staff pool be potentially narrowed to only include members who, staff members who fall under student campus life? Because then I think that kind of ameliorates a little bit of like, there's a student understanding on the board, because every time, like, I recognize there being a disconnect between faculty understanding what the student experience might be and maybe those student campus.
That's a good point.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a good point. So here's what I hear you say. If the complaining party is a student, choose from, and in the staff population, choose from the folks who are in the student experience, staff in the student experience.
Yeah.
That's a great comment.
Okay, thank you.
I think just something to add briefly with Joe, and this was talked about when we redid the student procedures, that when this was still under the code, the university hearing review boards have students on them. The concern was raised at the time, actually I remember talking with Beth Garrett about this, about we don't want students running and other students around a hearing board. I know that a solution that was talked about at the time, but eventually, I mean, with Beth's passing and just logistics, in essence, that potentially there could be students who are, in essence, if it's an undergrad in AAP, well, for instance, a PhD or a law student from the other side of the university wouldn't have that same issue. And also knowing that the complaints advisor and JCCs are law students, that there would be a way to potentially look at the various grad students, law students, or communities where, obviously, if you're in the same demographic, oh, it's a faculty member you could have, or a student you know, they should never be on the panel, but there might be a way to conceivably have students have some input while still being very sensitive to the concern. Again, some like law students, they're already involved in the process. Specialized demographics may be able to get in there, so you have some form of student perspective. But I know that's a larger conversation.
Yeah, we talked about it, and I hear you. The reality is, this is a lot of work. When you get a case, you're talking about, you know, 15, 20 hours in that week that you have to give. You have to be trained every year, and the concern, quite frankly, is and there's not a lot of people that can actually do this work. It's very difficult, particularly on the student side. Some of these cases are quite difficult to face, and we have a hard enough time with the staff and faculty we have feeling like they're sustained and they can be sustained in these processes. So I hear you. We're not closing the door on it, but you know, there's a level at which we are already, there's a lot of cases this is Title IX is a very busy area. Just saw the numbers up until last month, and we were at, on the student side alone, 297 complaints on the student side alone. So we need processes with dependable, well-trained individuals who can give it the time at that time. I'm not saying we can never do it, but I, you know, at some point, this university and other universities will reach the point where the education and training begins to bend the arc back so that we are avoiding, right? We are changing culture, so we're avoiding some of these issues. We are still building to the density we know we have in terms of the number of cases. So we are not there yet. So these cases are going to continue to grow. Now, I do think with some of the federal changes that may be coming down, many of these cases would be advanced and people would agree to go into them if there was alternative dispute resolution opportunities. And if that happens, what I hope we will see is actually an increase in complaints that are then able to be dealt with through restorative justice processes. Because a lot of these complaints, the person just cannot imagine spending a year, two, three of their time here on the complaint. But they would like the matter brought forward in a way that allows them to say how they were harmed, have the individual hear that and acknowledge it. So the long-term goal, I think, Matt, is to move away. I understand why we do it, but to move away from having these very formal complaints be the only way in which we can understand this issue. So more to come. I'm not saying no, but I just have to tell you, it's mind-boggling how many issues are out there.
Absolutely. And I think I can tell you from the code of conduct side, the UA and the CDC, we're looking at mediation and restorative justice and alternative resolution. Our pilots in there have been very fruitful. I just bring up actually on the selection panel for faculty and staff members on the hearing boards last year when I was the chair of the CJC. And a concern we face is you have burnout. And obviously, if it's possible to broaden the pool, you can spread it out so you don't have people who are going through so many very graphic, sometimes graphic and very disturbing cases. And I really appreciate you for that. So,
yep, I'll take that back.
Thank you. Next on the speakers is Bob.
Actually, I had interjected my question already as a follow-up.
Well, in that case,
fine, thank you.
Are there any other people who would like to speak on this matter? Hearing none, please, Joe. Oh, actually, Joe, final comment.
You said there's one more step before all of this kind of gets finalized and before there's that. So what's that final step? And then, like, what does it look like after that final step?
So we're still working with our little group to get the draft. It's still in draft, right, to get the draft in shape. We will, once that's the case, it will be shared at the Faculty Senate and at the assemblies again. And then we will complete the procedures and promulgate them. But we did this pretty quickly, and this is pretty complicated stuff. And so we're just taking another quick look at them and making sure that we have the definitions right, the processes right, and the like. So we have steps to go yet. We have to get to the Faculty Senate. I never actually got here before the faculty wanted to revise it. I actually have to go back to the Employee Assembly and the GPSA and SA because I've been there with the procedures before the changes. So I need to go back one more time. My new job is going around just taking up your meetings and share what is different about this version than the one that was that we were proposing.
Thanks so much. Any other final comments from Mary or John? Hearing none. It takes a lot of time. We're very glad you were here. So please join me in thanking Mary and John.
I will not be able to get home because there's so much fog. You can't see out the window.
Well, drive safely. If you'd like, please feel free to grab something, a bite to eat on your way out.
Thank you.
And thank you so much for your time. Next on our agenda would be a presentation from Marin Clarksburg on middle case accreditation. I don't see Marin here, so. And I haven't heard anything. She may have canceled the snow, but that being said, we will move on to the rest of our agenda. So if you can check in and see if we've heard anything about that. Facility committee and liaison reports. It is already 5:30, and we do have a number of items after this. So I would ask that, where possible, reports be kept brief. First up for assembly reports. Is there anything from the student assembly, graduate professional student assembly, employee assembly, or faculty senate that members feel necessary to bring forward at this time? Chris.
Assembly elections are coming up, and we are working on out there to let people know. That is an update from Craig and the employees.
Thank you. Any update? Any questions for Chris? Hearing none, anything from the student assembly, GPSA, or faculty senate?
Student assembly elections are coming up as well as the undergraduate student trustee race.
Any questions for the room? Hearing none. Anything from Charlie and or Rena? Nope. Okay. Next up will be committee reports. We have the executive committee. Sorry, Joe.
Yesterday, the executive committee met with Joanne, Joel, and Mike Kotlikoff to talk about the Budget Planning Advisory Committee. They recommended merging it or finding ways to have their, instead of it like being separate, merged, finding ways to add liaisons to the FPC and the Faculty Senate. So Matt will be reaching out to you, Charlie, about the more specifics about that and talking through it.
Yeah, that's already stopped by your office yesterday. Any questions for Joe? Hearing none, we'll move on. Just to note, we also have a bunch of things with scheduling and other items going on, so if anyone wants to talk to myself or a member of the executive committee after the meeting, please do so. Always happy to answer questions. Next up would be the CIC.
Yeah, just briefly, the CIC's got a late start to the academic year, but in late last semester, we made a strong start. We've had several meetings so far this semester, a bunch of things going on. Let me just tell you one, and that is that we, working with the support of the executive committee at the UA, have invited Bill McKibben to speak to the Cornell community next Wednesday. Those of you who don't know Bill McKibben, he's a renowned author. He wrote one of the most powerful books on climate change for a lay audience. He's the founder of 350.org, and he's on the faculty at Middlebury College, where the students and faculty convinced their trustees to change course after 4 years and divest as of January. So Bill is not coming in person, but he will be speaking to us via Zoom in Call Auditorium a week from tomorrow at 7 in the evening. And I ask your help to get the word out because it's short notice. We're working hard to get the word out. But I have flyers here, and I've sent you all electronic flyers as well. And again, the UA Executive Committee and the CICs are the primary hosts together with Cornell Climate Justice.
Thank you. Questions for Bob? Marty.
Not to deplete the physical attendance at the Zoom screen, but will it be available in Zoom remotely as well?
We're not live. We decided to not go live because we really want to try and get as many people to go to Call Auditorium as we can, but we'll record it and try to make it available after the fact.
Okay.
We'll have a question and answer period. We want a live audience, right? We'd like it to be an impressive event, so.
No.
And, you know, quite frankly, we debated whether or not to go to Call Auditorium or something this size, and, you know, but we decided we wanted an audience that would be a visible presence and therefore not live in.
Okay.
And I hope that's the right decision, which is why I'm asking for your help in getting the word out.
Thank you. Other questions for Bob?
Did you say you sent out like electronic flyer and stuff, or are you
flyer to you guys? Yeah, about an hour or so ago.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay. And we're working pretty aggressively to get the word out now, but we only started today, quite frankly. So we're a little behind the eight ball, though. This time, it's a week from tomorrow.
Other questions for Bob?
I have flyers here. I'll pass them out, but you got electronically too.
But they're not in color.
It's in color, isn't it?
No, these are in color.
Thank you.
There you are. Thank you. Any other questions for Bob? Hearing none, next up is CJC, Dale.
Yeah, the CJC finalized the questions for the UHRB application last week. We'll be reviewing the Qualtrics form tomorrow to make sure it's in order. Those applications will be going out and will be due at the beginning of spring break. For undergraduates at least, and we're going to be proceeding tomorrow with our review of our reorganized code of conduct document.
Thank you. Questions for Dale? Hearing none, next up is CWC. T.
We're presenting a resolution today on investigating the expansion of the child care center, and we're still working on the smoking survey.
Any questions for T? Hearing none, that brings us to liaison reports. Are there any updates from our liaisons at CPC, K KCPSB President's Task Force on Sexual Violence Prevention or other Citizens University quiz health and health benefits?
Sure. The CPC is meeting on this Thursday from 1 to 2:30 in Weill, and Paul Schreeder, the VP of Budget and Planning, will be presenting the current capital plan.
Thank you. Questions for Chris? Hearing none, we'll move on to new business. First item on new business is the reappointment of Charlie Walcott as University Ombudsman. In your packet in the middle, you'll see a letter I received from President Pollack formally requesting that Charlie be reappointed. She has made the recommendation request. It is our job to either concur either yes or no with it. As is our traditional practice, it's on our agenda today. We would likely vote at our next meeting, which is this coming Tuesday. We'll also be hosting President Pollack to concur or not concur with President Pollack's reappointment of Charlie. For those who were here at our last meeting, Charlie and Linda presented an annual update from the Office of the Ombudsman, as well as their operations. If there are any questions or concerns we'd like to raise, please feel free, we can talk about them now, or alternatively, you can send me questions and I will be happy to forward them on to Charlie and either ask him to come in person or provide a response to the assembly. Dale.
Do you know off the top of your head how many years he's been serving as the Ombudsman of the University?
And I have a rough idea. My understanding is he started serving around early 2010s, so around 2011, 2012. If you work backwards from this, whatever that would be, because I know he was chair of this assembly in late 2000. Like around,
oh, 2008, it's 2009. In the letter.
It's in the letter.
It's right in the book, beginning of
2011. Well, my intuition was correct. Thank you. Any other questions or comments concerning the reappointment process? Hearing none, if there's no dissent, I would ask that we postpone this until our next meeting. So it's on our public agenda for a week, and then we will take action upon it there. Is there any dissent to that? Hearing none, the reappointment concurrence is postponed. Next up is Resolution 3, examine the need to augment the Cornell Child Care Facility. The floor is yours to introduce the resolution.
So do I just give a brief overview?
Yes, so you would explain the rash resolution, the steps the committee has taken, who we've spoken to, we'll answer any questions, and then traditionally we'd postpone it for one meeting and then we'd consider voting on it at our next meeting, which is next Tuesday, March 12th.
Okay, so the rationale behind this resolution is basically the knowledge through anecdotal reports that graduate students, faculty, and other members of Cornell community who have children and are looking for childcare are often met with a long waiting list, which sometimes children outgrow. And so your child can be waiting on the facility to open up to the extent that they are no longer under the purview of that facility. And so there is suspected inadequacy of the facility. And we also suspect that there is the opportunity for that facility to be expanded reasonably. And so we've attempted to speak to the director of Bright Horizons, which is the facility provider, on the wait list, exactly the length of the wait list and how selections from the wait list works. However, they haven't been forthcoming with the information. They get very defensive about it. And so we wanted to introduce this formal resolution to get that information about how the waitlist is working, what the demand is, what the potential supply could be, and just overall examining the need to augment the facility. So that's what we're doing.
Thank you. Questions or comments for T? Bob.
Just a question. Bright Horizons is the organization running this. They're not Cornell, mm-hmm. they're correct, they're contractors.
Yeah.
So who do they report to administratively within the university, do we know?
I feel it might be the Cornell University honestly, I don't know. They don't report to the UA, definitely.
Yeah, no, I'm just...
But there is, I think there, the facilities and campus services maybe,
mm-hmm.
but not to us.
I do, just historically, going on 5 years ago, the 2014-15 academic year, I know we had the director of Cornell Child Care, or 2013-14, anyway, a number of years ago, we had the director of Bright Horizons, the Child Care Center, come and attend a meeting. We could certainly reach out and see what is in terms of who the reporting structure is, and also how that fits into this data request.
They go up to HR.
HR.
They're housed on all under HR.
So,
okay.
Mary just left, unfortunately, but Marty.
Yes, and the UA participated in the decision to build that facility. It was part of the facilities portion of the campus infrastructure committee's charge, and discussed with the preceding incarnation of childcare at Cornell, which was in the it was a part of human development and family studies program, the transition to Bright Horizons. So there's been a considerable amount of discussion in the UA about childcare and the need for it and those things. And I was looking through the resolution and spoke to T about this. There are a number of suggestions that I made editorial, mostly, in fact, entirely, that I'd like to field through her and see what she accepts. It's mainly referential things, but also getting it on one page somehow, much more important, but also clarifying some of the language, some of the verb agreement, work the subject.
Of course, and as I said, traditionally we don't vote on resolution the day it's introduced.
I know.
So we can you can have a discussion with T, and then next meeting we can amend or make changes necessary, and then consider voting on the resolution.
Sure. Can I circulate these to her, and maybe if she accepts them, can they come out as an alternative to what we presented, so that we have the clean copy? We don't have to go through amendments of small bits of language.
Well, if it's typographical errors, and you don't need a formal amendment, so please don't circulate it.
Grammatical, in other words.
Please feel free to circulate like that. There's no problem with that. So,
thank you.
Are there any other comments or questions for T on the introduction of this resolution? Hearing none, is there any dissent to postponing this until our next meeting, which time we'll have the ability to vote on it formally? Hearing none, UA Resolution 3 is postponed until our next meeting. This brings us to the next item on our agenda, which is the discussion on revisions to the campus code of conduct. By way of introduction, as I expect the entire assembly knows, the CJC have been working throughout this entire year to significantly simplify and reorganize the code of conduct. That process is ongoing, and we greatly appreciate the CJC's efforts in that regard. What the current strategy is to, this is the change is primarily around simplification of existing language and rewriting of existing language with making minimal substantive changes. One of the sets of substantive changes is the definitions of harassment, stalking, and other just definitional updates. And because those are actually substantive changes, CJC requested that they be brought informally to the assembly for just general discussion, such that when the full code comes through later in the year, we are able to move expeditiously, because just looking at where we are in the year, we're about half of the semester, which means we are 3/4 way through the year, and timing, especially when we get towards the end, is likely to get tight. With that, I turn the floor to Dale.
Well, I think Matt just covered almost everything that I would have said. I would like to state the point clearly, though, that this is the primary substantive change that has not already come through the university assembly in another form. So almost every other change we're making that is not reorganization or simplification was already proposed last year or has been requested more directly by President Pollack. So this change came out of the hate speech working group last year, as well as some of the proposals from President Pollack's task force. And we thought it would be necessary to bring it to the UA before we actually bring the whole document that everyone would vote on.
Absolutely. But they come from a working group on hate speech and harassment. Actually, I also, you may have noticed, I inadvertently emailed everyone this language last Wednesday when I meant to go to the CJC. But obviously here you see presented with a comparison of what the current language is, this was updated language, and roughly how it would look in the full code, although the formatting may change slightly as we simplify and rearrange, but this is generally the substance of the change. With that, if you have a question or comment, please raise your hand or placard. First, I have Bob.
Just a quick comment, and I've only briefly looked at it, but I'm wondering about, have you thought about the ordering of the additions? Personally, I would think you might want to put the new sections D, et cetera, up in front of A, and so we highlight that we are concerned about harassment and all. Obviously, our community is concerned about rape, right? Yeah. To start with rape and then get to the other, make other things to me seems interesting.
I think D and E would probably be moved together.
Yeah, I'm thinking maybe all of the new stuff up right under to the top is my suggestion. So
so as a community, we make it clear that we take this stuff seriously. It's not a tagline.
Thank you. And also, there's no for conics. There's a list of going, I want to say it goes down to X or Y of the total number of offenses. So this is already at the relative top, but we would certainly have that written. Richard, do you want to say something?
Just in the committee, we suggested adding political belief. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just repeating that.
Yeah. And that, again, this was nothing the committee had already voted on. This was just the language that had already been proposed. And so the committee will be making a number of amendments to individual language.
Just for context for members who may not be in CJC, the code of conduct in its listed definition of protected status throughout, there are places more, I think more often than not, it includes political affiliation in protected status.
It actually includes political persuasion.
Yes.
Whatever that may mean.
Yes. No, when it's, that's the language. Political persuasion is included frequently throughout the code in some places and not others. We are, as you can see, standardizing definition of protected status, in essence, things that the community considers to be invidious and therefore prohibited. And therefore, as part of that, that discussion has been ongoing, considering that it is, again, more often than not, already considered protected. And should we just go the whole way and include the definition and then therefore be done with it? That being said, I do have speakers list. Are there other comments, questions, or concerns about this language? As Dale and I said, this is really meant to provide an opportunity if you have concerns about it. This was vetted and discussed fairly extensively last year, especially in the spring, with our working group on hate speech and harassment. However, our goal really is to ensure the assembly does not have major concerns, because when this comes in, this will come in with the full code revision with hope later in this year, likely during April. Hearing none, I think this we can consider this closed. I should rephrase it. Is there anyone who has an overall concern that such that this were to come forward in the, along with the rest of the code, they would find this issue, this new language, problematic?
Well, I just have one question about the language in D. I mean, harassment isn't just stopping someone from participating in education or employment. It could actually be in their living situation. So, like, is there any way to include language that would, I mean, it's interfering with their everyday life. Sort of similar to your last one. You know, that a reasonable person would feel threatened by it. I mean, you can harass someone so that it doesn't interfere with their employment or education, but it does interfere with their life. So I don't know how to, I would like to see it expanded.
Thank you. I remember last spring when it was discussed, there was in essence that if it was, for instance, an on-campus housing or related right. to the university, then that right. would fall within the goal because it's considered all still. And also, that being said, if it was completely out and not related to Cornell, it would fall under the general criminal or civil. I mean, again, this exists for our code. Harassment is still a civil and a criminal penalty issue outside of Cornell. And the balancing, part of the balance that was discussed was, okay, where does Cornell's responsibility end and just the rest of society, and that being the courts and their responsibility enter? But I think that's, we can certainly take it back. I know the members of the working group, I will happily talk to them. They're not here right now, but.
I think the one thing that I would bring up for discussion with the committee is on top of the university's educational research and or employment programs, maybe include the campus life programs.
Yeah, because. Yeah,
anything the university provides that you take part in, you shouldn't be deprived of.
Yeah, because this is for campus code of conduct.
Yes.
I mean, this is beyond just what you're doing in a classroom.
Yes. I think based on what Dale said, the goal essence with this language, and actually I was there when we drafted it, was to be encompassing everything that is Cornell related, obviously being cognizant of things that aren't wholly not, but education, right, living on campus or activities in the same way, my understanding is would fall under this, and we can make sure we clarify that. That being said, any other final comments or questions on this current language as it stands? Hearing none, that does exhaust our agenda. An executive session is listed on this agenda. However, we were able to address it prior and before this meeting, so we'd have no need for one. We are 10 minutes early. Are there any final comments or questions? Hearing none, our agenda is extended. Our agenda is completed. I have nothing further. This meeting is adjourned at 5:49 p.m. Thank you very much. Thank you.
the
mayor says.
He wants me to walk in on Sunday.
I mean, at this point, it's for future.
Put my bike away for.
I'm a fair weather cyclist. There's two little drops below about 45 degrees. I don't get on the. Bike anymore. I should though, because I'm feeling.
So, yeah.
I have my winter coat.
Yeah, I was in your class.
My hibernation.
I just sit and stare at the weather. I saw next week is going to be like 35, 40.
I purchased a new bicycle just as the weather started to cool down. So I'm really, I got a few rides in, but I'm really eager to get out. So I'm doing the same. I'm watching for the one.
Yeah.
Reading for that one.
So it's allowing the members to have a chance to actually read it to make sure it's.
Have a good night.
The language is pulled from throughout New York State.
I have an, my old bike has from the Navy.
I have one from the old police auction. $10.
I found it in my parents' office. Pulled it out and stripped the rubbers off and replaced it.
So hostile environment is together.
Ridden, I remember age right for like 100 miler.
On that, on that.
And three times, and then I was like, you know what? I'm riding enough now. I should get a bike.
Yeah, yeah. No, I got my dog's beautiful bike. It's sitting in the base.
I have to probably be 5 minutes late and have to leave around 8. Sorry.
Picked up a model that is in its frame.
I don't know.
I think